G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 17b.
So, in order to illustrate what we are talking about in dimensionalism, let's open up the study aid, page 59. And there you have the title, Dimensionalism Against Reductionism. And I try here to symbolize some models that try to illustrate what is implied with it. By the way, most of these diagrams are from that book from Koestler, Against Reductionism. Not exactly, I have adapted them for our purpose. And it was in the lecture that Frankl gave. You know Frankl as the psychology of logotherapy, one of the highest level of psychology. And here we have three different diagrams. And I want to talk a little bit about the three diagrams. For instance, we take diagram A. And we have that also in my book on the oneness of being. So we know it already quite a bit, but we can recapitulate it. In the middle of that diagram A, you see half a cylinder that is cut in half from top to bottom. Now, if that cylinder hangs in a space, in a room, you know that that cylinder has three dimensions. It has length, breadth, and height. So it is three-dimensional. Now, if I take that half cylinder and throw light on that half cylinder, say I throw the light from the right side horizontally on it, then that cylinder brings forth an epiphenomenon on the wall on the left side, namely a shadow of a square. Can you see that square? So the identity cylinder, which is three-dimensional, can be translated to a lower dimension, from spaceland to flatland. And in flatland, that appears to be as a two-dimensional phenomena, namely a square. If I put the light on top of the half cylinder and let the light shine on the cylinder, then on the bottom of that room, I see a semicircle, which again is only two-dimensional. So the moment I translate one level to a lower level, from the three-dimensional level to the two-dimensional level, the appearance of that identity naturally changes. So I have a different phenomena. The same is true if I put the light from the front, then you get at the wall behind the half cylinder a shadow that has the form of a rectangle. Again, on the two-dimensional lines. Plane. Yes, thank you. So, recapitulating, we said, what is dimensionalism? Dimensionalism is an identity that, when it is translated to other levels, appears in different phenomena. So one identity, like a half a cylinder, appears as a rectangle or a square or a semicircle. So naturally you can figure out, according to the angle on which I take and throw the light on that three-dimensional half cylinder, Every time I get on a lower level, on the two-dimensional level, another phenomena. Yes. So I have one identity here that appears as three different phenomena. Is that clear? Very clear. Now, again, we can see the one and the many, which explains to us translation, which explains to us that the one principle of being can translate itself infinitely, and every time when it translates itself, it brings forth a different phenomena. I always have difficulty with phenomenon and phenomena, the plural and the singular. Different phenomena. Okay, this is the theory about it. Now, let's take diagram B. And there again, we have quite a different lesson to learn. There again, we have a room, and in that room are suspended three different three-dimensional bodies. The first is a cone, that is three-dimensional. The second is a cylinder, that's also three-dimensional. The next one is a sphere, that is also three-dimensional. Yes? So I have three different identities. If I throw the light from top to the bottom and translate it to a two-dimensional level, I get the same phenomenon. Every time it's a circle. So I have the very opposite, which is very interesting. For Christian Science practice, this is terrific. Perhaps you think, what is terrific about these three things? Well, if you take a case that has a kind of appearance, of manifestation, like a circle, you cannot reason that this is coming from the same noumenon, that behind every case, no matter how alike they look, you can't treat them the same way, because the noumenon behind it can be something very different. That can be the cone, it can be the cylinder, it can be the sphere. Yes? So a practitioner cannot say, oh yes, somebody rang me up and said, I have what you call a flu, grip, flu, you say flu. So you say, oh yes, I have had that for 100 times in my practice. I know how to treat it. And treat it in the same way. He's lucky if he's successful. Because that would be the wrong method. To reason from the phenomena to the noumenon. You can't do that. This shows it very clearly. This is also a symbol from Köstler's book. Frankl, who was a psychologist, he said, you see, that's the problem we have. You know, Frankl with the logotherapy said, that's the thing. You can see that you have a case, like a circle here, but they can be a neurosis. But you can't say I treat the neurosis always the same way. Is that neurosis that has the same symptoms as any other neurosis, that can be a somatic neurosis, can be a psychoneurosis, it can be a no neurosis. You know what I mean by no neurosis? No, N-O-O. It's from the Greek and it's used in psychology, meaning knowing, knowledge. So he has a neurosis because something is disturbed in his knowledge. So this is another indication that we need to understand very clearly what happens in the translation from one level to the next level. When we come to the level of science, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science, and to the practice of those levels, naturally we'll see that this problem is a very important problem. Just as I have said, a heart attack is not a heart attack. A heart attack is a phenomenon behind which can be quite a different noumenon than in the heart attack of the next case, and the heart attack of the third case, and the fourth case, and the fifth case. You are not allowed to treat it the same way, though the manifestation seem to be identical. So we have the opposite, that identical phenomena may have different identities as noumena. Therefore, what Mrs. Eddy teaches is that you always have to, that you have to look away from the phenomenon and look into the infinitude of the divine noumenon, and through divine mind reading, from the divine mind, from the noumenon, divine mind, you have to read the phenomena. That's the lesson here. Yes? I only want to point out the importance that of waking up to a consciousness that is structured according to levels. Let's take the diagram C. This is even more interesting. There we start out not with a space lander. Here we start out with the flat lander. That rectangular that you see is the plane. It's therefore two-dimensional. Are you with me? Can you see that plane that is like this on the diagram? So if we are a flat lander, and we are happy on that flat land, and nothing happens, no disturbance happens at first, when we now look from the left to the right, nothing happens, though there exists, without knowing, above it, a three-dimensional object, that cone. Can you see that cone above the flat land, right on the left-hand side? The flatlander has the faintest idea that that cone exists, that another dimension exists. That's what Abbott was telling about the flatlander, that he doesn't know anything about the spacelander, and he says that this doesn't exist. I can't experience it on my flatland. Nothing like this exists. So what I cannot experience, that does not exist. Period. That's it. And then as time goes on, suddenly he sees that in his flatland there is suddenly a hole in it. Actually, you see the cone coming down and pinching through the flatland. That's a second cone from the left. Pinches the flatland and makes a little hole. Unfortunately, that design is not quite complete, because perhaps one should show it that there is a hole being made. It pinched the flatland. So you can see what a terrific crisis comes on the flatland. They suddenly run around and say, come on, come on. Suddenly there is a hole in our flatland. We don't know from where it comes. Suddenly there is a hole there. And as they wait a little bit longer, and the cone gets deeper and deeper into the flatland, that hole gets bigger with the third, gets very big with the fourth, and has a terrific big hole there, a round hole, and they get absolutely disturbed suddenly a whole new universe appears for them, and then suddenly it disappears and everything is okay again. The last cone, when it has dropped through the flat land, has left nothing behind it, and everything is again wonderful. How could we think about that if we take the same story on one level higher? If we are space landers and are happily in that space land, and we investigate that space land wonderfully, we see the Earth, how it is round and has three dimensions. We have to look out in the skies and into the universe. It's still a big space, an infinite space, and everything happens within that infinite three-dimensional space. How happy that is. What happened before the Big Bang? Perhaps they were at that point. That they had a universe that was whole and healthy and whole and harmonious in a three-dimensional, and that suddenly a fourth dimension, whatever that dimension is, or a fifth dimension or a sixth dimension, broke in and said, and pinched the whole thing and said, I'm the Big Bang. And I began to change everything. I began to build up suddenly a new universe. Unexplicable, because it comes from another dimension. Wouldn't that be a good hypothesis? To say, well, who says that our universe as a three-dimensional universe, as we perceive it, has not been, you say, pinched? When you, oh, you say something?
Pierced.
Has suddenly been pierced by a higher dimension. That higher dimension that was before the Big Bang, that always existed. Just as the cone always existed without, the flatlander was aware of it. But as time went on and things moved, suddenly a new dimension breaks in upon our concept of a three-dimensional or four-dimensional or five-dimensional universe and brings in a new dimension and changes the whole universe. Changes our concept of the universe. But the dimension always existed. We were only not aware of it. And so, with this last diagram, which I like very much, but that doesn't mean that you like it, I always think of that last diagram and say, well, all the great physicists like Einstein, he would say, well, we live in a multidimensional universe. We live here, right here in this room, are other universes at work. There is not only our three-dimensional universe at work. He says there is a fourth or fifth dimensional universe at work. We only are not aware of it because we are not trained to think through that lens, through that grid, which can perceive it. And so we experience things that are inexplicable, and therefore we do not really see the reason for whatever happens. All right, Mrs. Eddy says that Christian Science was revealed to her as one infinite calculus explaining the line, plane, space, and fourth dimension of spirit. So she could see that we have a four-dimensional universe, at least four dimension of spirit, not three dimension of matter and one dimension of spirit. There are four spiritual dimensions, and therefore we must start out to get away from the line lender, those who only think along one line, one dimension. That would be the line lender. We have to get out of that and see that there are also flat lenders, that we have also space lenders, and so to see that the whole textbook must be considered in this way, not only in that linear way of thinking, which demands a lot. It demands that we can restructure our consciousness here in the dimensional sense away from that boring one linear way of thinking, and to adopt that system thinking, which is already more complex, system thinking, structural thinking, dimensional thinking, cybernetic thinking, holistic thinking, and in this way we expand our dimensions constantly. Yes, that is the symbol with which I try to explain what we afterwards will see as the spiritual import of the chart. Okay, now I know that this concept of dimension is not easy to grasp, so I always try to find a simple illustration. One of the simplest illustrations is this, that you have learned in school, in chemistry, that there exists something I called H2O. Everybody has learned that in school. H2O. This is an identity, a very definite identity. But how does H2O appear when we introduce other dimensions, like temperature? H2O is not the temperature. If we introduce now levels of temperature, then suddenly we have the same identity, but if the temperature is high, we have steam. If we have a normal temperature, we have water. And if we go under the freezing point, we have ice. Three very different phenomena and the same identity. So again, with this I want to show that we have to be very careful in our reasoning and in our subject, that we are not thinking only in one dimension. Every time you ask somebody, what is H2O? And they say water. Funny enough, they never say ice or steam, because that's the most common appearance of it. And so again, one reduces it and simplifies it. But we must always see the whole of it and see that we have to have a general or a holistic sense of the whole. Okay, that are the symbols. Oh, only 2-3 minutes left. Well, that's all right. So, in holism, we see we must have a multi-dimensional holism. And the investigation is, what is that multi-dimensional sense of holism? So at least we go out from the fact that reality is multi-dimensional, that it is holistic. And does you remember how David Bohm said recently that only wholeness is the real? So if we want to get hold of the real, we must see the wholeness of the real through the dimensions. Or we have not a multi-dimensional wholeness, we would then try to have a one-dimensional wholeness, and that is a contradiction in itself. That would not be dimensional. So we must introduce categories of dimensionality into a subject in order to understand that subject. For example, we have done that in our lives when we went to school. We first learned arithmetic, then after arithmetic we learned perhaps algebra, after algebra perhaps we learned calculus or trigonometry or things like that, and went higher and higher into the field of mathematics. So in the same way, in ontology, we must see that we may start out with simple dimensions, very simple dimensions, but on the basis of a correct basis, other dimensions grow out, and when we get hold of a higher dimension, that out of that higher ontological dimension, even higher ontological dimension will grow out, until we feel we have a holistic sense. And that's the way how it developed in the history of the Christian Science idea, which I want to show later on. We see, I just first want to cover the theoretical ground of it. So we see that one dimension forces, so to say, the appearance of a higher dimension out of its own logicity, so that there is a hierarchy of dimensions. The dimensions are not disordered, so that we can just mix them up, but that they have a very definite order, therefore a hierarchy of orders, a holarchy, a holo as the whole, and archai, hierarchy, that together they call holarchy. The hierarchy of the whole is called holarchy.